Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, I'm Paul Stevenson, and this is episode 122 of VRP Rocks, the ultimate classic rock podcast that delves deep into the world of rock and the legends that make it. Make sure to subscribe to VRP Rocks on your podcast app right now so you don't miss a single episode. They come out each Monday. Now, today I'm thrilled to bring you an insightful interview with Tino Troy, the talented guitarist and founding member of the legendary band Praying Mantis. With a career spanning over 50 years, Praying Mantis has left an indelible mark on the world of rock music, from the band's beginnings in the early 70s to the pivotal role in the new wave of British heavy metal. Tino's journey is a testament to the band's enduring legacy. Now, I saw these guys at Winterstorm last year, and they put on a hell of a show. And if you're not overly familiar with the band, I know that they didn't make too many waves over in North America. Definitely do check them out. They were part of the new wave of British heavy metal, as I said, but they were more on the melodic side of it, and they achieved notable success with their release Time Tells No Lies, which features the timeless anthem Children of the Earth, and it really is an anthem. Now, in this interview, we talk about the formation of the band, those early years, the tours with other famous groups, their nearly moment with a song that became a huge hit for Rainbow, a track that they were recording but were told they couldn't release because Ritchie Blackmore wanted it. We touch on the band's success in Japan, the crossover with Iron Maiden, the issue with the management and what went wrong, plus the new album which is out now. Now, I spoke with Tino before the record Defiance was released, but it is out now, so please do check it out. So join me as we explore the history and enduring joy of Praying Mantis with their ever-present guitarist, Tino Troy. It's your 50th anniversary this year, which is absolutely bonkers, Tino. Absolutely crazy stuff. So take me back to the beginning. How and where did Praying Mantis begin?
Wow. Now you're talking. And the wrinkles don't show, do they?
Not at all.
Well, it all began when I went to college. I was at Furniture College, I built my first guitar at school, actually. My first electric guitar at school, my last year at school. And I learned to play electric guitar at the time. Chris, my brother, who's also in the band, as you well know, he was doing classical guitar lessons, and the family used to come around at Christmas and Easter, and then mum used to get him to play a little concerto, of course. Like, I got all jealous and all that, I can't have that. And they'd give him money. They'd also give me money as well, but not for playing, not for busking. And it transpired that I decided, right, I had enough of this. So I made this guitar at school, and I locked myself away in my room for 8 to 10 hours a day and practiced and practiced and practiced. And at the time, we had what was, you know, in analog days, when I had a record player, and it was a Garrard SP25 Mark II, and you could actually put that on half speed almost, from 33 to 16. It was almost half speed, so you could drop the songs by an octave. So I learned all these solos just by doing that. I learned how to play the pentatonic scale. I drew it all out. Never had any lessons or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
I did that, and a mate of mine introduced me to Status Quo. And then, he did actually introduce me to Status Quo, but he showed me how to play a 12-bar riff and Chuck Berry style. And so I started doing that. And then, of course, I discovered Status Quo through another friend. Pile Driver was the first album I got. Then I got all their back catalogue as well. And we were playing Status Quo songs all the time. I got to college, at Furniture College, met Pete Moore, who was also a big Quo fan. And we just locked ourselves away in his place after college and practiced. And then came Thin Lizzy, and by this time, Chris, I'd asked Chris, we needed a band, and we couldn't find the bass player, and I asked Chris if he could play bass, and he goes, what's bass? He didn't know what a bass guitar was. So I converted that guitar that I first built at school into a bass guitar, and I showed him, like, the first song we played together was Caroline by Status Quo. Yeah, that's how Praying Mantis were born, in 1974. In fact, it was 1973, it was Junction, because the band was known as Junction, then it became Praying Mantis in 1974.
Now, you guys obviously went from that early kind of 70s, mid-70s period to being what was known as the new wave of British heavy metal, and you guys joined that kind of movement, and you were part of that whole movement. And we've got to speak about Metal for Mothers. It was an iconic release, and then there was the tour as well. And on that tour was some incredible groups amongst that kind of genre, Motorhead and Magnum and Iron Maiden, Diamond Head, Saxon, Angel Witch, I mean, Samson as well. I mean, what do you remember of that tour, and who did you play with on those dates?
Oh, great times. I mean, mostly we played with Iron Maiden. We did a few with Angel Witch and Samson. But we introduced ourselves to the scene by, you know, doing our first demo tape and giving it to Neil Kay at the time. As new wave of British air metal sprung up, all these charts around the country were sort of developing, and we saw all these bands from, you know, different parts of the country getting into these heavy metal charts. And at one point in our chart, in Sounds, we had all three of the songs from our demo on that chart. So we had, like, I think it was Captured City at number one, and then Love Us to the Grave at number three, and then Johnny Cool at number 11 or 12 or something like that. So, yeah, it was great times. And getting the recognition as well, having that first album, being on Metal for Mothers as well, that really elevated the band. And we thought, hey, this is brilliant. We're on the crest of a wave here, and we joined the party with everyone else. So.
It does. It sounds fantastic. And what was the movement like? What was the scene like amongst the bands? Because it was a change in time in terms of music, and this heavier stuff was coming through after what had been kind of punk from the end of the 70s.
Yeah, well, at first, everyone was really sort of close-knit, because it was like this whole development that we're in this big gang together. You know, this is new wave of British heavy metal. We're going to push everything else aside. And but as you know, as we did that, then of course, then the rivalry begins. You know, you got to be better than that next band. They got to be better than Tigers and all that, and Iron Maiden. So yes, of course, you get a bit of rivalry, and everyone's like competing for, you know, the spot and top spot, basically. But you know, I wouldn't change it for the world. And you know, wish we could relive those days again. And I'd probably take a different route this time.
And which different route would you take?
Well, I don't know. I question that a lot of the time, because I'd say, well, if I took that route, then I wouldn't have had two beautiful daughters, you know, that I love very much, you know. So it's all swings and roundabouts, really. But I would have, you know, would have listened a little bit more to some of my mentors, but there was so much sort of difference in opinions those days, because you said, like, you know, you can actually be taken to the cleaners by, you know, certain people at the time, businessmen in the music business. But at the same time, you could be too wary and, like, lose the impetus by not making the right decision or the right choice. And we had, like, a management company at the time. When we would do the tour with Iron Maiden, we actually had one half of the management who used to manage Cockney Rebel. And Rod Smallwood went on to manage Iron Maiden, and Bob Keating, his ex-partner, came on to manage us, and that didn't work out very well at all. To the extent we actually had Peter Mench approach us, managing Def Leppard at the time, wanted to take us over to the States. And of course, our management decided, well, we don't need America, we can do that for you ourselves, you know. And of course, like, we trusted them, we don't need them, but we signed a deal with Arista Records, who were American based at the time, and expecting it all to, you know, get stronger, everything to elevate from there. But everything started to fall apart, in fact. And that was it. Then we ended up sacking our management. We got involved in this legal wrangle that took ages to clear up. And of course, by that time, we'd lost the engine was, like, drifting far ahead while the carriage was, like, coming to a halt. And we were in those carriages at the back and never picked it up again, really. But you live and learn.
You do indeed. You do indeed. But while you were with that engine, I mean, Time Tells No Lies, 1981, seminal record. Everyone still talks about it. It still contains the song Children of the Earth. And as I said to you, I saw you at Winterstorm Festival, and that one took the roof off the place. Everyone still loves it to this day. It has become a proper anthem, hasn't it?
It is very much an anthem, yeah. And it's actually our biggest song, because, I mean, like I said, loads more Spotify hits than anything else.
Did you expect at the time when you wrote it, because I think it's the last track on the album as well, isn't it? So did you expect to get such a recognition from the fans and to carry on for so long?
No, not at all. I mean, at the time, it was a great song, and it still is, you know. And everyone, that's the one that everyone sings at the gigs as well, you know. Yeah. If they know the chorus, we can actually leave off and not sing the chorus, and they will carry it for us. So it's a brilliant song. It's got all elements. It's got melody. It's got a really good sing-along chorus. It's got nice, you know, slow bit in the middle, quite dramatic, and it's got a great riff. All Mantis elements.
Yes, absolutely. And as you said, things kind of went a little bit awry, didn't they? And the band didn't release an album for 10 years. But in that time, you did do some really interesting things. I mean, you teamed up with Paul Di'Anno and Dennis Stratton, didn't you, out in Japan? So tell us a little bit about that project.
Yeah, well, that all came together. We had a bit of a hiatus after that. We did, after Time Tells and Lies, once we finished that, we tried to record another album. It didn't happen. That's when we got involved, where we, you know, got rid of the management. And then we decided to team up with Clive, first of all, to do to do the Stratus thing, the Stratus project. It became Escape, first of all, Clive vs. Escape. Then we changed the name to Stratus. And we went down more of an American AOR route. Good album again, but, you know, wrong time. You know, we were on this sort of like a tail end of everything all the time. I was playing catch up, and it didn't happen for us. So again, we all went our separate ways. We had this hiatus for a few years, and then I got a call from Dennis saying Paul Di'Anno had been in touch, and he was trying to get his band out to Japan. It was at Battle Zone at the time, I think, and Masa Ito, who was the big DJ out there, he was the equivalent of our Tommy Vance over here. Yeah. He said, well, you know, I'd like to do this as the 10th anniversary of the New Wave British Empire. Was make this hybrid group, you know, a super group almost, you know, like a Paul Di'Anno, Dennis Stratton from Iron Maiden and Praying Mantis. We went over there and played half a Maiden set and half a Mantis set, and it was great. And from there, we actually built up a good relationship with the Japanese fans. We had the record company who actually recorded the Live at Last album there. By the time we came back, Paul continued with his Battle Zone and Killers, stuff like that, and then Dennis joined the band. So it was, some great years we had there. We had done quite a few studio albums in Japan then, I think.
Yeah. So what do you think it is about Japan then? Because obviously they love the kind of whole new wave British heavy metal. They still love classic rock and all that sort of stuff over there. They can't get enough of it, and bands still do tour to this day over there. So what do you think it is about Japan that loves this kind of the stuff that you guys produce?
Well, they love us, you know, which is great. I mean, like, we just see these adoring fans there, and they just like watch you mesmerised and that. And it was such an amazing feeling going over for the first time. They produce all these gifts. They come up with these presents, and they give you this embossed wallet, you know, like a Time Tells No Lies album, you know, the gatefold wallet with everything inside. Ah, amazing. And lots of different presents as well, watches and things like that, with the Time Tells No Lies logo inside, the analog watches, the old analog watches. It was amazing, and those fans, they sing those songs as well, you know, and they were really loud as well. I couldn't believe it. Great times.
Indeed, indeed. And as you said, you guys kind of got together with Dennis, and Praying Mantis came back in the early 90s, and you've pretty much released solidly every 2 to 3 years. I mean, every now and again there's been a slightly longer gap, but mainly you've released every 2 to 3 years, and it's really impressive to do that over such a time span.
It is, yeah, and to tell the truth, you know, we could have released them much quicker, but we got really into the songwriting and concentrating on everything. If it wasn't right, we'd go back to the drawing board, because we didn't want to put any fillers on the album, you know. They all had to be good songs, and it was important, and that's been our, you know, that's been the case to this day, you know, that's our mantra, you know, sort of like a praying mantra. They, you know, those songs, the best we can do, and we're never satisfied. Obviously, it gets more difficult with every album. It doesn't have to be better than that. But, I mean, we feel we've been doing it. I mean, we just, like, move the goalposts a little bit, just add a little bit of less than that, and a few more notches on that one. It's a bit like, you know, it's a working project. It's like everything is one album. Like, everything is based on this one concept, and we just, like, embellish it. I think that's the best way of explaining it.
Indeed. And well, you're up to your 13th studio album now. It's coming out April 19th. It's called Defiance. So tell us a bit about this album then. I mean, what was the recording? What was the writing process like behind Defiance?
It was, I'm probably not the best person to talk about that, really, because I was moving the house at the time when we were actually starting writing the album. So I haven't been that proactive on the songwriting side of stuff. I mean, later on, I got involved in the production, but I'm here in this box room at the moment. I record a lot of the stuff over here and that arranged everything, produced it all in this room here. But I mean, I got really involved in it, and you know, with the arrangements and the production of everything. And I've written, you know, 1.5 songs on the album. So it's, you know, it's not as if I've been totally lazy.
The title track itself, it's available to listen to. You can see the video on YouTube as well. It's all up there. It's a big melodic rocker, isn't it? So tell us the story behind that one.
Right. Well, Chris wrote that. Defiance, it's very poignant. I mean, the message gets across. Well, you don't like to get too political with it, but it's about the defiant stance of the Ukrainians against the Russians, and that's how it works. But it's a very, very cleverly written, and like I said, it's got everything. Andy Burgess, our other guitarist, he's been more proactive on the songwriting this time, some really cracking songs. And it's just sounding brilliant. We've had two different drummers actually on this album. We've had Hans, who was doing the he was busy working on something else at the time, and we wasn't sure where that was going. So we had Steve, a guy called Steve Price from Bambo, a band called Bambo in the UK.
Indeed. And I've got to ask you about I Surrender as well. It was on my list of things to ask about, because there's the story goes that you guys were supposed to be recording that one and releasing it, but then a certain Mr. Richie Blackmore came along with Rainbow and he wanted to do it instead. So is that the true story? What happened behind all that?
It was exactly as you say. We were in Battery Studios, we called them Times Hells and Lies. Our management decided we needed a single at the time. And they came up with this, we said we agreed, and they came up with this song, I Surrender, from Russ Ballard's publishers. And we really liked it. We said, yeah, let's do this. And we actually recorded the whole of the backing track. We recorded all the drums, all the guitars. We did a guide vocal as well and everything. And then, you know, by the time it came to do the lead vocal on it, the manager came in and said, got some bad news, and I said, what's that? And we can't do I Surrender because Rainbow were doing it. And who were Mantis to compete with Rainbow at the time? So we thought, well, yeah, we'd shelve that. And we did, on that second album, we actually tried to do, in fact, it's on the album that's called Demorabilia, which was like a lot of demos that we'd never actually released. And it was on that album that got released in the Japanese market. And many years later, we thought, well, let's bring it back out, you know, resurface it again. So, and that's what we did. And we don't know what it's going to go like. But a couple of people said we should actually release it as one of the singles on the album, because then it'll be a really good talking point. So we might do that.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I mean, at the time then, because obviously it's a great song. It was a great song from Russ Ballard as well. And what was your thoughts at the time when they came along and said Rainbow's doing it, Richie's taking it? Were you gutted?
Yes and no. I mean, because we thought, well, let's not do a cover on the album. Let's keep it playing Mantis. But then we found out from Arista that they wanted us to do it All Day and All of the Night by The Kinks, because Van Halen had such success with You Really Got Me. So I think they were looking at a similar situation. So we thought, well, yeah, that's probably a better idea, you know, because that's had some mileage with, you know, you really got me with Van Halen. So we thought it could have a similar effect for us, but no.
What could have been, eh? What could have been? And we've got to talk about as well that the fact that the songs on this record, as you said, it's the heavy sounding, it's melodic, it's got all the hallmarks of Praying Mantis. So I've had a sneak peek to the album, and it sounds fantastic. So for fans eagerly awaiting the release of this full record, April 19th, as we said, describe to them what they can expect to get from this.
You'll get classic Mantis along with some new vibe attached to it. As you know, every song's a little bit different, and there'll be a few surprises on there. One of the surprises is Surrender, as we spoke about. Yeah, definitely a little bit different, and it's a mixed bag of sweets, really. One's got a really good flavour, so.
And one last question from me, then. I hope you don't mind. I ask everybody, it puts you on the spot. What is your favourite Praying Mantis song? And the thing I say, the caveat, you can't pick anything off the newest album because that's what everyone would do.
The favourite Praying Mantis song? Well, really, it's got to be, I think, Children of the Earth, really. It's got to be, yeah. I mean, it always has that long ago, and it's so enjoyable to play. And the great thing is you don't have to think about playing the wheel once and it just like fly off automatically. Yeah.
Well, Tino, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Best of luck with the new album, as we said, Defiance, out April 19th. I urge everyone to get out there and get listening to it.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, and thank you for everyone for listening, and go out there and buy an album. It's a great album. You won't be disappointed.
There you go, Tino Troy there. If you're not overly familiar with the band, please do check out their catalogue and give their new album Defiance a chance too. And that's it for this week's episode. Make sure to subscribe to VRP Rocks on your podcast app right now. Check out the VRP Rocks YouTube channel too, all the social medias, all that sort of stuff. Just search for VRP Rocks everywhere and you'll be able to find us. Anyway, I'll catch you for next week's episode. So until then, take care.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.